From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Joshua Johnson, sitting in for Michael Krasny. Should California require children to be vaccinated before attending school? That issue is behind a bill working its way through the legislature to end the so-called personal belief exemption. How do we balance public health against personal choice? We'll explore the bill in our first half hour. Then, reality star Kim Kardashian West sent some NPR listeners into a frenzy after appearing on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Are there some people who simply do not belong in a venue like public radio, or do we just need to lighten up? Vaccinations for California school children and Kim Kardashian West. It's all ahead, next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. Good morning. I'm Joshua Johnson of KQED News, sitting in for Michael Krasny. Vaccination is viewed almost universally as an essential part of our public health system, a safe and proven way to prevent disease. But in California, a bill is pending in the legislature aimed at parents who, for a variety of reasons, opt out of vaccinating their kids. Senate Bill 277 would, in most cases, do away with the so-called personal belief exemption, preventing children in public and private schools from attending if they do not get their shots. That bill could pass today. In this hour of Forum, we'll explore the bill, discuss the legislative fight surrounding it, and consider what happens next. Joining me here in the studio is KQED health reporter April Demboski. April, good morning.
Good morning.
And also here, back again from the 9 o'clock hour with us now, is KQED's California politics and government editor, John Myers. John, welcome back.
Thank you. Good morning.
Now, we only have this topic for a half hour, so please feel free to join the conversation, especially if you have had to deal with this matter of vaccinations firsthand. What is your perspective? How did you decide what the right thing was to do for your children, or for that matter, was it even a question? Feel free to call us, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Email us. The address is forum@kqed.org. You can also post your comments online. Go to kqed.org/forum. April Demboski, let's begin with some perspective. I would imagine that most, if not nearly all, of California school children are getting their shots. How many children do these personal belief exemptions actually affect?
That's right. About 90% of kids in California are vaccinated. Parents do choose to vaccinate them. The concern that has arisen, though, is that that remaining, 10%, roughly 13,000 children who get a personal belief exemption, they tend to cluster. And so that can create pockets in certain parts of the state where you have as much as half of the kids in a particular school who are not vaccinated.
And this kind of kicked up again as a debate after the measles outbreak at Disneyland, right?
That's right. More than 100 kids and 100 people in California got sick. And public health experts really believe that that was fueled in part by the kids who were not vaccinated. And the concern especially is kids who can't be vaccinated, like infants who aren't old enough. A couple infants did get sick with measles and some are still suffering.
Expand on that a little bit more in terms of what the concern is for kids who aren't vaccinated, can't get vaccinated. They're really depending on other children around them to be vaccinated for their own protection, right?
Right. That's called herd immunity. And so you rely on other people to be vaccinated to not be infected. And that is what protects the other parts of the population that can't be vaccinated yet, either for medical reasons or an infant who's not old enough yet.
So you literally become like a break in the armor. You become the chink in the armor. If you're the person who hasn't been vaccinated, you could be the one who ends up getting someone else's kid sick.
That's a good analogy.
John Myers, what exactly would this bill do?
Well, I mean, you know, it's been an interesting one to watch through the legislative process. And I will say by way of understanding it, that if you look at all of the bills pending in Sacramento this year, and there are roughly some 2,000 or so kind of in the mix that have been in the mix, this one, I think, has become one of the most high-profile bills, basically because of the conversation. I mean, the policy is important, but the policy is fairly narrow in California. The conversation has become much bigger. So, right, it would remove, as April has seen and others have covered, most of these abilities for parents to exempt their children out of getting vaccines before they enter kindergarten. This is the second go-around of this discussion in California. We had a change in the exemption policy over the last couple of years in legislation that Governor Brown signed into law. This is a much narrower field. It's narrowing. Critics say to the point of forcing them into something they don't want to do. But the crowds of people who have showed up at the state capitol to testify over the last few months. This bill has gone through the state Senate, through the state assembly. It passed the state assembly. We believe it's now going back for its final vote in concurrence on amendments in the state Senate today. And then we go to the governor's desk. There have been large crowds, and there is really not a lot of middle ground, I would argue, Joshua, on this. This is a black and white issue. People who are very much for vaccines and believe these exemptions should not exist, and people who believe they need the exemption and are skeptical of vaccines. There is not a lot of compromise, it seems like.
Quite a few of those folks with strong opinions are lining up on the phones right now, and we'll get to those comments momentarily. But, John, does it look like this bill will pass? As you said, it already passed the Assembly, and now it's back to just resolve the amendments with the Senate.
Yeah, every time the bill has been amended, it has been to try to find something that the opponents didn't like, some way that people could deal with homeschooling, that they could have some other way to have the system they want for their children. I think the bill goes to the governor's desk. And then the question is, what does the governor do with it? As I said, the governor signed another narrowing of these exemptions for vaccines recently. There's a feeling in the Capitol the governor is leaning toward signing it. One of his top aides actually testified on her own behalf for the bill a few weeks ago. That was widely seen in the Capitol as a bit of a nod that the governor was in favor of limiting these exemptions. But the polling, I should point out, too, there was a statewide poll last month by the Public Policy Institute of California. 67% of adults surveyed said that children who don't get vaccines should not be allowed in schools. Whether that's big or a small number, we don't know the context. Is that grown over time or is that diminished over time? But 2/3 of the Californians surveyed at this point think that this is a good idea, that we need to have vaccines. So I think it's going to be interesting to watch over the next probably couple of weeks.
We're discussing a bill to require vaccinations for California school children with KQED health reporter April Demboski and KQED's California politics and government editor John Myers. I'll continue with a few more questions for you two, April and John. But first, let's dive in on the phones. 866-733-6786, beginning with Andrea in Oakland. Andrea, good morning.
Hi. My son got a whooping cough 25 years ago at the nursery where he was born, because there was a pod of non-vaccinators. And when we discovered it, the pediatrician knew exactly what the route had been. And so I've been trying to have parents not have a 20% mortality risk by people who won't vaccinate their children. This has been going on for 25 years. I don't know why it's still an issue. I mean, if you're going to get advice, scientific advice from pop icons, you're going to get bad advice. And I don't think other people's babies need to go through what I experienced.
Andrea, thank you for calling and thank you for sharing that. Hey, April, I wonder what you make of what Andrea said in terms of getting advice from pop icons. There have been a lot of very famous faces who have said things about vaccinations and the concerns. There's been talk about a link to autism. It seems to have kind of become, I don't want to say a pop culture public health debate, but it's risen to that level in some cases, where famous people who are not doctors have had a lot to say about it.
Right. And that traces back to a study, a falsified study by a scientist who claimed to have found a link between the measles vaccine and autism. And that study has been thoroughly discredited.
What other kinds of things are opponents of this measure saying, other than those falsified studies? What's that opposition been like? How large? How vocal? What are they saying?
Well, it's been a very vocal opposition. And if you look at attendance at some of these hearings, it seems very large. Again, remember, 90% of parents do vaccinate their children. But it has been very, very vocal at the state capitol. One of the biggest arguments is about parental rights. Let's step away from the science for just a second. Parents think they should be the ones who decide what should be injected into their children, and they don't like this idea that the state will tell them what they have to do.
Let's continue on the phones now with Hillary in Corte Madera. Hillary, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
What's on your mind?
I think that it's black and white whether people want the bill to pass or not, because it's not that well of a written bill. It's not black and white where people stand. I chose to vaccinate my children for almost every single thing, but I chose to do that on my own schedule, not on the government schedule. And that is what a lot of people are actually opposed to. It's not the government telling us that it's a good idea, but it's the government saying you need to vaccinate your children for multiple things all at one time, which makes it impossible to know if something has gone wrong with which vaccine, and also being told to vaccinate your child for a sexually transmitted disease the day they're born, and saying that it's a this is my last point, that it's a public health issue at school because we're being included is the HPV vaccine. And so far as I know it, we're not having sex in the classrooms.
I certainly hope not. Hillary, thanks for sharing your thoughts with us. Before I let April respond, there was also someone on Facebook who shared a very similar comment. Sarah wrote to us, "Sheep being led to slaughter. The state can decide what's injected into your child. There are 240 vaccines in the works. This is limitless. Your child could potentially be injected with 300 pathogens. It's 49 vaccines by age 6 now. I'd read up on the other side's point of view before you start celebrating. You just became a permanent customer of a multi-billion-dollar industry." April Demboski?
Yeah, I think one thing that is important to note is that parents today, you know, when they take their kids in to be vaccinated, it's a lot more vaccines than were recommended usually when they were kids. So it can be very surprising. It can be very jarring for a parent to see a baby, you know, crying and have, you know, another few shots lined up. This bill, it's important to note, there's only 10 vaccines that are required under the bill, and HPV is not one of them.
Go ahead, John.
Well, I was just going to say, and I think what's fascinating, too, is that the bill has been narrowed and narrowed. We talked about this amendments before. There were amendments taken about, you know, even if other vaccines come up, it's not going to be under this. And again, there are all these ways to try to mollify some of the criticism. But at the end, I do think there's been a real black-white nature to this. And the most fascinating part politically to me is that it has galvanized people who are both concerned about safety, health safety, and people who have parental rights issues. It has brought those two communities together. I think that's why you've seen such a raucous debate in Sacramento about it, and of course online on social media.
So wait, let me back up to something you just said so I know I heard it correctly. the amendment that you were talking about in terms of additional vaccinations under the bill that the Senate's going to vote on today at around noon, I believe, if this would apply to a specific number of vaccinations. It's not like whenever a new vaccination comes along, you automatically have to get it for your kid. This bill is narrowly tailored to a handful of vaccinations? Is that it?
There's been a narrowing of it. I want to be careful not having gone through every line of the bill right now, and April's been covering it more than I have. But my point is there has been a narrowing of what those vaccinations are, of what you have to do, again, trying to find a way to make people who are concerned about the mandatory vaccination part feel better. Maybe some of them do, but there's still a lot of opposition.
Yeah, so there are 10 vaccines that are listed explicitly. There is some language in the bill that would create some freedom to consider additional vaccines as they are developed. And some of the narrowing that John's been talking about is around medical exemptions. Some of the amendments have said that it will now allow people to consult with their doctor, and that doctor is allowed to consider a family medical history in deciding whether or not it's appropriate.
So this might involve, say, because a vaccine is a dead or weakened form of a disease, maybe if a child has a severely compromised immune system where they would still be potentially harmed by even having it present in their body, that might be a reason for a child to maybe be exempt or to be treated differently?
This is referring to there is something called vaccine injury where there are some side effects to some vaccines. The rate of that happening is extremely, extremely low. But that's the kind of consideration.
Let's continue on the phones now with Catherine in Greenbrae. Catherine, good morning.
Good morning. So my comment is a little convoluted, but it's while I'm completely for vaccinations, I do follow what the AMA does versus what other countries do. And the AMA's schedule of vaccinations is really aggressive. And probably, in my opinion, too much. Now, I do have a medical background. I'm not a pediatrician. But, you know, when you look at what other European countries are doing, you know, they don't give herpes to a newborn child. There's no reason to give the herpes vaccination to a newborn child. The chickenpox vaccination, it's so new that no one knows what the long-term effects are going to be. For instance, is a child who gets a chickenpox vaccination and going to end up getting chickenpox at a much older age because it just wasn't strong enough, like allowing the child just to naturally get chickenpox? no child has ever died from getting chickenpox. So, you know, and then the blend of vaccinations that are recommended all at once, I think, are way too aggressive. So while I am completely for vaccination, my kids get vaccinated, I pick and choose based off of the schedule that I've worked out with my pediatrician, what vaccinations to get and when. So we stage ours out. Mm-hmm. There are certain vaccinations that are better given when the child is older. They have longer efficacy than giving it to them when they're younger. So we have opted not to give it at the time the AMA has chosen, but has recommended, but to do it at an older age.
Right, right.
And I think those decisions should still remain with the parent, while maintaining what everyone refers to as that herd mentality. I think this country has gotten way too aggressive on vaccinations, and I think it's beneficial to look at what other countries are doing.
Gotcha. Catherine, I appreciate your comments. Thanks very much. Since you mentioned the American Medical Association, it is worth noting that this month the AMA released a policy statement saying that they support tighter limitations on immunization opt-outs. Let's continue on the phones now with Gary in Napa. Gary, good morning.
Good morning.
What's on your mind, Gary?
Well, I am an emergency physician, and I just got off a 24-hour shift, so I apologize if I'm tired. But
it's okay.
When I take care of a child who is not immunized, I have to suppress my emotions to provide the best care for the child. But quite often, I have to spend extra time with the parents to explain what I'm doing. And, for example, recently there was a wound that needed sutures in a child. All I wanted to do was anesthetize the wound with local anesthetic. We've all had that at the dentist, for most of us. We've all had sutures, for most of us. And I still had to explain to them that this is not going to cause autism. This is not going to cause anything wrong. And if I don't numb the wound, it'll cause pain for your child to get sutures, and your child needs sutures. That's just the latest example.
So basically what you're saying, Gary, is that you're dealing with parents who are kind of coming in with what they think is reliable medical information, and you have to kind of convince them in the heat of the moment, no, really, trust me, I'm a doctor, your kid needs this.
Well, I don't believe the word reliable applies. The last caller had some common sense discussion about the immunization series. I'm not a pediatrician either, but when I take care of children who have gotten measles or some other infectious disease that could be prevented, either they are immunocompromised and have cancer or some terrible disease,
mm-hmm.
and because other parents didn't want their child to be immunized, they have put at risk the life of another child. I don't think the parents of one child should decide what other children should be exposed to when they don't vaccinate their own child.
Gotcha. Hey, Gary, I got to keep moving on. We're running out of time in this half hour. I appreciate you calling in, and thank you very much for calling after a 24-hour shift. Please go get some sleep. Let me get to a few comments from our listeners. One listener wrote via email, "When my first son was born, I believed that vaccines could be more harmful than good after scouring websites and reading a Dr. Sears book. After my son got pneumonia, I realized I would never forgive myself if he got sick as a result of a vaccine-preventable illness. I now realized I was influenced by the anti-vaccine propaganda. I am proud to say my 18-month-old is fully vaccinated, as my son is now." Another listener writes, "I feel so sorry for these parents whose children have developed serious problems like autism or other health problems. They're desperate for something to blame, and it's easy to blame vaccines with all the misinformation out there. But the science is clear. Vaccines do not cause autism. They do not cause epilepsy, asthma, or any of the other things that desperate parents call vaccine injuries." And Suzanne wrote us via email, "Access to education should not be used as a punishment for children whose parents do not agree with the entire CDC-recommended vaccine schedule. This is not a public health issue. Vaccinations are on the rise due to AB 2109. This issue is about money and big pharma and not about public health. The Disneyland outbreak did not happen in schools and would not be prevented by Senate Bill 277. John Myers, if this bill passes, what's next?
Well, I think that's a good transition from what that person said. I think two things could happen, and I think one is more likely to happen. The first of all is if the governor signs it into law, I suspect there'll be a lawsuit. That happens in a lot of pieces of new legislation in California. Someone will go to court and say it's not legal. They may invoke the rights of people to have their kids in public schools and that this is threatening it. We'll see what happens there. They could also file a measure to overturn it by referendum on the 2016 ballot. They'd have to have about 370,000 signatures and they'd have to get them in 90 days. That's not easy. That's not cheap. That's probably a lot harder. I suspect the lawsuit option is probably what you would see first. You know, and there has been a lot of accusations, Joshua, to that last person that there is campaign money, that there is money from the pharmaceutical industry tied to members of the legislature. Yes, there's some money that the pharmaceutical industry has given to members of the legislature, but I think that's a bit of a tentative at best, if not no connection there. There hasn't been enough. I think that what you're really seeing here is people grappling with the issue. And again, the fascinating part of this from the discussion we're having in California is while some people think the argument has become too bitter, too nasty, this is the way the system works. People go and redress their grievances at the state capitol and they tell people how they feel. And sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. And people are always looking for why they lost. But I think it's not over no matter what happens. If the governor signs it into law, I suspect we're going to still be talking about it.
April, do we have any idea about how some of these anti-vaccine arguments came about? I mean, it seems to me, at least it always did seem to me, and maybe I'm biased because before I, you know, previously I wanted to be a doctor before I went into something steady like journalism. But it always seemed to me pretty obvious that vaccines save lives. You know, you vaccinate a child against it, it dramatically reduces the chance of them getting sick. And then somewhere along the way, culturally, these other arguments cropped up that are not based on science that is as widely accepted or as peer-reviewed as the support for vaccinations. Where did that come from?
I talked to a historian at the end of last week who explained that a lot of, you know, the arguments in the actually she refers to it as a vaccine resistance movement, which is important to know because you have heard some parents say, you know, we vaccinate for some but not all. So it's not completely anti. But she was saying, you know, this movement shares its roots and its rhetoric with a lot of social movements from the 1960s and the 1970s, the feminist movement, the environmentalist movement, consumer rights movement. You especially saw women's advocates start to question medical advice about reproductive health and childbirth, and you saw an increase in home births and women rejecting professional advice at the time to use formula instead of breastfeeding. And so when they had kids, they started to extend this questioning of authority to their kids and vaccines, and you see that now.
That's KQED health reporter April Demboski. You'll find more of her reporting at our blog, State of Health. It's kqed.org/stateofhealth. April, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
And KQED's California politics and government editor, John Myers. You'll find more political coverage on our blog, Fault Lines, kqed.org/faultlines. Thanks, John.
You're welcome.
Time for a break. When we come back, we will shift gears from public health to public figures, namely reality star Kim Kardashian West. She caused an uproar when she appeared on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. She appears at a Commonwealth Club event tomorrow, and the internet is about to break again. We'll get into the controversy just ahead. I'm Joshua Johnson. Glad to be with you. This is Forum from KQED Public Radio.